Hello and welcome to WS Podcast. My name is Wojciech Salski. I'll be your host for today. And before we begin, may I just remind you, if you've not yet, please make sure to follow, subscribe. It allows you to see all the episodes coming out as they go. Roughly every week, every Monday at 4 o'clock British time. And if you'd like to support the podcast in any other way, follow the link below. There are options there. If you'd like to just suggest a book that I should discuss, or maybe you have a suggestion in general, please send some comments, emails. All is welcome. And if you don't feel like doing any of it, it's completely fine as well. Thank you so much for being here. And I'm sorry that I cannot be with you in full with the video as well as the audio. I'm still in the process, as expected, of setting up my new studio, and it may take some time. Christmas is coming, so here we are. I must say it is quite freeing, though, to be able to record without the video, so I might do that from time to time, simply it makes the process so much easier. No need to set up anything other than the microphone and a glass of water, a notebook, and some ideas. So yeah, here we are. Thank you for being here. I also will welcome with all the love the any comments you might have about the quality of this recording. I am recording in the new space. I'm trying to make this space even nicer, and then I'm going to show you the sort of the final effect. But for the time being, audio only. I am interested, though. I'm quite curious to see how it turns out in terms of the quality, the noises. You know, it is a very different room. There is actually a window here and a big one. So, yeah, let's see. Let's see how it goes. And as I promised, we will continue our discussion about freedom. And this time round, I will talk about freedom in a more ephemeral, maybe a bit less down-to-earth, everyday kind of way. So we've explored in the last episode the idea of freedom of speech, and the idea of private property, you know, freedom to choose, essentially, freedom of finance and so forth. And the one big topic that I didn't get to actually explore with you is also the one that I'm most interested in terms of my everyday considerations of it. And there were quite a few books. There are quite a few books already and episodes out there for you. If you enjoyed this episode, I'll put the links below. I'll put those links below for you, and I'll mention some of them as we go through it. And I'd like to basically today discuss with you the idea of freedom from a philosophical, spiritual, sort of existential perspective. So I'll bring up a few quotes that I've taken note of, ones that really inspired me, and I kept them with me over the years. And I'll also paint a few pictures from different cultures. I'll point you in the direction of a few books that you might want to read if you're interested in these particular, you know, cultural or philosophical or spiritual traditions. And I'll also, once all this is done and I sort of paint these different colors on the canvas of this episode, I'll then share my own perspective. And of course, you know, bear with me. I understand that my own perspective seeps through every word I say. And that's also an interesting idea, right? Do I choose what I say or not really? And we'll definitely get into that in detail in a second. But essentially, after presenting you all these ideas, I am aiming to basically share with you what I think, and then open, leave an open-ended question for you to think this for yourself. So the question, the title of the episode, and the question that we will sort of wrestle with is the idea, the question, are we really free? And yeah, let's see. Let's see what we come out with, right? I'm just gonna take a few notes here. Have some ideas already popping up as well, like popcorn. So yeah, let's dive in. So in terms of freedom, it can be argued, I think, fairly you know, fairly securely, fairly squarely, what a tongue twister, that the idea of freedom is one of the fundamental aspects of human existence, right? It's a part of the Declaration of Independence in the United States. It certainly is a part of the Bill of Rights in England, in the UK, and pretty much any country out there. And let's not get into the grooves of whether or not the governments of these countries actually respect these freedoms, but pretty much every country out there that is a fairly respected, considered, you know, fairly stable in many ways, lawful country, lawful space, considers this idea of a fundamental aspect of human existence being freedom, right? Slavery is considered to be illegal, and for good reason. I think, you know, I hope that in many ways, less and less people each day are a slave to either a system or another person or maybe their own habits and stuff like that. But let's try and stick to the you know, to the fundamentals here in terms of our our existence in this world. So I'll put the laws and regulations on the side, and we'll explore more of the difficult, really, the more complex, I would say, because it's much more difficult to describe and discuss things that we cannot, you know, touch. And it is very difficult to, for example, convey a subjective perspective to another person, right? Language sort of allows us to do that, and that's what I'm attempting in this episode and in the many others. And you do the same when you're telling your friend a story or when you're sharing your, you know, day with your spouse, maybe once you're getting ready to go to sleep or whatever. But if you think about it, it is a fairly complex task to bear, because your perception, the way you see the world, is very complex. And there are many behavioral and past experiences and expectations and predicaments and the many variables that are pretty much impossible for us to describe comprehensively and at the same time understand in the same way as the other understands it, simply because we are not the other, right? We don't even if you know, or you think you know, your wife or your friend or your colleague, you simply cannot know all of them. And from that, the communication is quite a difficult one. But I'm sort of getting off topic here slightly. So yeah, the idea of us being fundamentally free, right? You are free to pursue your own goals. You are free to choose many things, many aspects of your life are to a degree free. And most importantly, we assume, and we'll get into that in a second, we assume that all of us have something considered free will, right? So your free will, in layman's terms, is the ability to choose between one option or the other, whatever that may be, whether Whether it's a question of what are you going to wear today, or whether it's a question of what do you want to do tomorrow, or which word to choose today, or, you know, stuff like that. And especially if we consider the things and activities that we do on our own in our own free time, that's when I think the highest degree of free will can be exercised, right? So, for example, as we discussed last week, if I'm at work and I have 7 different tasks to do, my degree of my free will in terms of what I'm gonna choose to do in that moment is probably slightly curbed, at least in this more down-to-earth plane, by the mere fact that I'm at work, I'm being paid to be there, and it's not up to me. I cannot suddenly choose to play banjo, you know, instead of doing these tasks. But on a more philosophical level, there is always the free will to choose, or is there, you know, I'll explore that later a bit more. But the idea is obviously that you could choose in that moment to suddenly stand on your desk, scream, dance, jump out the window, or maybe just get on with your tasks. And then the free will also could be considered which task are you going to do first, if you have such options to choose from. So now, in terms of the idea of freedom, we've already explored that when I mentioned Viktor Frankl's book Man's Search for Meaning, which I promise I will finally get to prepare an episode for you about, if you've not read it already, which you probably should have, since for 4 years now I've been banging on about this wonderful book. Basically, the idea in that book is that we not only have physical freedom, sort of in this external, you know, body suit, in this physical world, but we also have a mental and spiritual freedom, right? And obviously, you could consider religious freedoms to be of the spiritual, and mental freedom or spiritual freedom, you know, whatever you want to call it, your freedom to think whatever you want to think. And yet again, that's an exploration I'll do in a second, whether or not we do choose what to think. I think it's a bit of both, and I'll explore that in a moment. But I'm just writing down some ideas for you. But the idea from Viktor Frankl's exploration of you know, our freedom is that at the most essential, we are free to think what we think. And so, for example, you can be put in a cage, you can be bounded, you could have your you know, mouth taped, your eyes closed, and stuff like that. So potentially you could be restricted in all the aspects of your physicality from any freedom of movement, freedom of word, freedom of, you know, whatever, freedom of speech, and so forth. And yet you still have the freedom to choose how you think about that experience. And at least from the perspective of both Stoicism and Buddhist teachings, it's exactly that ability to choose in any given moment what you think and feel that determines your experience, and that you can change. And we'll explore that in a moment. So finally, a third introductory point, let's say, is that, of course, there seems to be a really close relationship between freedom and responsibility. And this one is very close to my heart, simply because I do believe people are genuinely better when they are left to choose and do what they wish, but when they are also called to responsibility for their actions. I think we all are responsible for our actions, essentially, the moment, you know, we can argue at which point in life, but if you consider your freedom to choose what to do, you should also, in my opinion, take responsibility for those choices. And it's kind of, you know, it's a wishful thinking to expect that you can choose whatever and then not suffer the consequences or enjoy the results of your choice. And of course, maybe in some aspects of life, one can get away with such sort of, I would say, cheating in a way, you know, playing on codes. If you've ever played Sims and entered Motherlode to get some more money to build a nicer house at the beginning of the game, you know, you know what I mean. But we'll explore the idea of karma in a second, and then we'll ask ourselves whether or not then whatever we do is absolved of responsibility. And of course, I appreciate that there are many situations in the world in which those that are responsible for causing harm get away, and those that are free to choose badly and then don't suffer the consequences, but others suffer consequences of those choices, you know, innocently in a sense. That's, you know, without question. But there is still this intertwining relationship between freedom and responsibility. Just because we don't suffer the consequences of our free choice doesn't mean that we're not responsible for it, right? So you might not have to pay the fine for breaking a window of some shop, but you are still responsible for breaking that window, right? If you were the one who threw the brick, let's say. So yeah, let's explore some different influences, and I'll also try to intertwine them with some quotes that I believe are quite, you know, reflective of this idea. And I'll point you to a few books that we've discussed. So let's look first at the free spiritual sort of maybe religious, spiritual, whatever you want to call it, philosophical explorations of freedom from the Eastern philosophies or spiritual teachings, right? So if you remember, we've discussed Tibetan Book of Living and Dying by Sogyal Rinpoche, which is by far the most popular episode on this podcast. So I'll put the link below for you, and if you are interested in this, it's certainly worth checking out. It basically talks about the Tibetan Buddhism and its teachings, and is fairly closely correlated to at least from my perspective, to this idea of a cycle, right, of a sort of rebirth and death, reincarnation. And the traditions from that area of the world seem to have it that you are responsible for your actions, not only in this life, but all the others, right? So there is a concept in Hinduism called moksha, and I hope I'm saying it correctly. And basically, it's the idea that you can liberate yourself from this cycle of birth and death by attaining, I guess, enlightenment in other traditions called enlightenment. And why do I want to touch base on this one here straight away is I said earlier about karma. And if you remember from these seven spiritual laws of success by Deepak Chopra, which I've linked below, this idea of karma is a big influence on also on pop culture at this point, I think. I wouldn't say it's unknown to an everyday person in the West as well at this point. It is not necessarily understood always the same. And even with my teacher, his, just as a disclaimer, he's not a Buddhist or he doesn't really have any specific sort of stamp on his perspectives. I guess we are discussing with him all kinds of things from different cultures, all mixed around. But we've explored this idea of karma, and you know, in many ways, this idea basically, I would summarize it that if you believe that you have a soul, that is, or an Atman, a soul, you know, some sort of eternal being at your core, which does not die when you die in your physical space and as your physical body, it only gets transformed into another state, potentially another life, if you believe that it's a reincarnation, or into another state, then this karmic baggage which we carry is nothing else but a sort of like a like a whole, I don't know, how would you call it, biography of your soul's journey through the lives, right? And so karma in our pop culture is usually referred to as something that is instantaneously gonna sort of, you know, maybe catch you if you do something wrong, and someone sees you stealing and then you fall, they are like, oh, that's, you know, instant karma. Or you could say karma is a bitch. I literally heard it today at a meeting with my friend. And it's interesting because, you know, at least from those traditions of the East, from my understanding, it's not necessarily that karma is good or bad. It simply is, the same as everything, really. You know, according to these teachings, and basically it's like a blueprint, like a history of all of your deeds. And so you can accumulate good karma or bad karma, and because the belief is that what comes up must come down and all is in constant equilibrium, the universe will always you know, be at a state of balance at some point, whether in this life or the next or the previous one. You will have to pay off or benefit from that debt or credit that you accumulate on the karmic front. And the interesting, you know, point here in terms of free will is, of course, that if we do believe that to be the case, that there is some sort of karmic baggage that you have, then you could argue that you're not, that your free will in this life will be limited by the karmic debt you may be carrying, right? So maybe something that happens to you that, you know, subjectively from your perspective is perceived as negative is just an outcome of a previously accumulated karma. And maybe you were not, you couldn't choose that to happen for you. And I don't know if that's the case. It seems to me to make sense to a degree. But I won't, you know, spoil the fun. I'll get to my perspective on free will going forward. Now, of course, in Buddhism, you have the state of nirvana, right? Which is essentially this idea of a state of enlightenment and freedom from suffering, right? And I heard recently somewhere that it's not about freedom from suffering because all life is suffering, which is often considered to be the case, you know, by people who are not really knowledgeable about the Buddhist traditions. Rather, it's freedom from suffering from attachment and such. So from suffering from within, right? And since Buddhism assumes that all that we are experiencing right now is not real and it's all in the mind. And so only within the mind can one cause oneself to suffer by our own, you know, perception of what is going on. We can alleviate the suffering by simply accepting what is, without judgment, without attachment. And so, for example, you know, you have the law of impermanence, understanding that everything will pass and it's just a matter of time. And so you can be free of the attachment and suffering about losing someone you love, for example, if you practice and remember and remind yourself often, basically get into a state of understanding that all will pass and that's normal, and it's not, it doesn't have to be causing you suffering. And then, you know, of course one can argue whether or not that's how easy it is to do in the moment, but the idea stands that in a state of enlightenment, if you attain enlightenment, the belief is that you will be free from suffering, from self-inflicting pains of the subjective experience, essentially. And for this particular topic, I would definitely recommend you check out the Letting Go episode, and of course all of the other episodes connected with David Hawkins's books that I've made. This is the second most beloved episode on the podcast, and it's a great one as well. It's my personal favorite, to be honest. So if you are interested in exploring these ideas, that's the space for you. The idea of letting go, of course, is to let go of both the outcome, the expectation, the attachment, the result, what is going on from your emotions. To let go completely is to attain this state of enlightenment where nothing bothers you anymore, because you simply are. And of course, sounds easier than it can be done. Talking from experience, I'm nowhere near that. And quite frankly, I don't know if I exactly want to be there. But let's see. So in this space, I'm just going to mention the quotes that I have of my own. So of course, there is one from Buddhist scripture that the mind is everything what you think you become. And this is essentially that, you know, it's all in the mind. And the second one that I wanted to share with you, is actually from Dalai Lama, from the Tibetan Book of Living and Dying. The ultimate goal of the spiritual path is not to achieve something, but to realize our true nature, which is freedom itself. So from these perspectives, you are not really free until you free yourself from, you know, experiencing this world as something real, which is a tricky proposition, but I think a good mind twister to explore. Now, of course, in Tao, and we've discussed Tao Te Ching by Lao Tzu, and I'll share the link below as well for that, you have the concept of Wu Wei, which is this idea of an effortless, sort of spontaneous action that arises basically from being in harmony with, you know, with the world. So this idea of becoming like water, right, that you are able to adapt to any situation, and so by being so flexible and adaptable, you are free to flow through your life without the suffering and without the opposition. And you know, it's interesting because of course we're exploring these ideas that seemingly have not much to do with freedom per se, but of course out of these ideas stem our comprehension or our doubt whether or not we are free. And what does that mean to be free? So, for example, would you consider it to be more free to flow with the stream the way it takes you? Or would you consider yourself to be more free if you are paddling against the current of that stream? And of course, the idea of free will is that you can choose either. and these traditions are maybe going a step further and asking, you know, why? Why are you choosing this or that? And of course, do you have a free will to choose, or are you choosing that because of some external pressure, past experience, your predisposition, or your own tradition, your own, you know, upbringing, your own nature, right? So let's look at the Western philosophies now. And of course, it's a big word, Western philosophies. You know, when I was noting it down, I thought, like, I don't know why it seems that, you know, we've been taught to think so dualistically, and sort of West East. I'm not really sure where the line is drawn. I don't remember any time being shown the map of, you know, oh, this is the West, this is the East. Especially that in Poland, you know, depending on how you consider Poland, some people say it's Central Europe, some people say it's Eastern Europe, some people say it's Western Europe. No one just says that it just is. So here I have three options, and they're a bit more down to earth, simply because they, you know, I think maybe to our own detriment in the so-called West, we dismissed many of our traditions from the past. So free will in existentialism is, of course, the idea that individuals simply have a freedom to choose their own path in life. And that may include choosing your mate, unless, you know, your marriage is arranged, choosing your the work you do, choosing how you want to spend your everyday, choosing where and when and what to eat. You know, of course, to a degree that you can choose, and I'll explore that in a second. Essentially, being able to choose whatever in your life, right? And so, of course, in this, from this perspective, we need to explore why do we choose to self-govern ourselves that way, right? And so the concept of autonomy, popularly known from Kant, is of course this ability to self-govern and for us to make decisions based on reason, right? And now, now this is the big one. So a question for you, just to think about. Who do you think decides? Do you decide with your mind? Do you decide with your so-called reason? Or do you decide with your so-called heart or your emotions? Are you a rational decision maker or an emotional one? Or maybe you're a bit of both. Because if you remember from the book by Daniel Kahneman and I don't remember his second surname, Thinking Fast and Slow, which I'll link below as well, which is an incredible book about basically our psychology. We have two systems, according to them. One, which is sort of this freestyle, quick, much more emotional, much more guessing system. And then the more deeper thinking, slower, analytical one, which only gets turned on as and when needed, simply to save on capacity, let's say. But this is a question for you. What do you think, even right now, what do you think your thinking is decided by? Your emotions or your rational thinking or a bit of both? For example, I sometimes wonder when I record those episodes, which Wojtek is talking right now. Am I already in the state of flow, simply exploring these concepts and being so immersed by this activity that I have already, you know, accessed that second more deeply thinking mind, or not? Maybe I'm still shooting sort of off the cuff remarks that just sound nice, you know? Maybe I'm just completely mumbling some absurdities into the microphone, and because I'm enjoying myself and because it's, you know, it's on good spirited, good intentions, I'm enjoying myself, and so here we are. So I don't know, it's just a question for you, but I do tend to doubt the degree to which we think we have the autonomy of that thinking. It doesn't seem to me so obvious that I just simply choose what to say. And since I surprise myself often, especially in really great conversations or in recording a podcast, with the thoughts that I that sort of flow through me, it seems to me that we are not necessarily fully aware and choosing, you know, exercising our free will to the degree to which that free will is supposedly available to be exercised, right? Okay, so now a third point before we go any further is the idea of self-actualization, right? So we've already explored the free will to choose, the autonomy, so of course the ability to make decisions. And so in psychology we have this idea of self-actualizing. It's this idea of realizing our full potential, right? The pursuit of personal growth, the pursuit of happiness, as it's beautifully said. And here, yet again, a question remains: to what degree are you free to choose that self-actualization, you know? And this is yet another, you know, mind-bending idea with which I've definitely wrestled for quite some time now. To what degree am I choosing what I like, and to what degree am I choosing what I'm interested in? I don't think I've made many conscious choices of choosing my taste, for example. Of course, it might vary, and there were times in my life that I was choosing a certain activity over another, potentially because, you know, my peers at school would like that, and so I wanted to be like them, or maybe my parents suggested that this is a good way for me to, you know, to live my life, and so I did. But it doesn't seem to me that even if we take away all these external impacts, impulses, influences, it doesn't seem to me that it gets any easier in actually choosing consciously, logically, whatever you want to call it, what you are interested in, what you are doing. So for example, why am I podcasting? That's a great question, you know. I don't know why I am podcasting. I mean, you know, I can come up with many reasons why I do this. And over the years, so many more reasons came up. But it's not obvious for me that I have chosen to podcast with a full understanding of what this will entail at the time when I picked up the microphone for the first time and decided just to, you know, to record a little something. So yeah, what does that mean to choose where we self-actualize? What does that mean for us, you know, to choose our personal goals, our personal freedom of that choice? It's not an obvious answer, and I don't want to give you any answers here. I'm sort of playing with this idea for your and my own benefit. So let's look at a few influences in spirituality, and then we'll explore some philosophies, and then I'll sort of try to tie it all together. If you remember, we've recently discussed the way of the Sufi, and in Sufism, there is this idea of inner freedom. If you remember, the idea basically, yet again, sort of echoes what we've discussed in terms of letting go and nirvana, which is the liberation of the soul from the constraints of the ego and the material world, right? So at this point, I think it's a good moment to introduce this image of a monkey and an elephant. So I remember I think it was from one of the episodes of a secular Buddhism podcast, which I'll link below, which at some point a few years ago was a big, big influence in my weekly practice of contemplation of these topics from Buddhism and not only. This idea of a monkey mind, right? We've discussed a moment ago whether or not you're choosing what to think, right? We have the freedom of thought, supposedly. Now, if you've not already, please take a few minutes after this episode is done, or maybe even take a moment now. You know, I'll be there for you once you click play again, and just engage in this activity of sitting down and simply, maybe close your eyes, you don't have to, it doesn't matter, simply trying not to think anything and see just how many thoughts you have which are not necessarily freely yours, right? For me, I've been, you know, practicing meditation on and off for years, and my mind ain't, you know, less full than it was. From time to time, I sort of get to experience this feeling of sort of emptiness, but it's very fleeting. You know, I bet in many ways I simply am not doing it right. But my point here is that it doesn't seem like we are free to think fully. And so there is this parable or this idea of a monkey and an elephant. An elephant being our higher self, you could say our soul in this for the purposes of this discussion, and the monkey being the ego self, so the smaller self, right? So for example, the elephant is that deeper experience that you have, this awareness that is slowly but surely moving through this warped space-time experience, whereas the ego is what supposedly, and I quite like this idea, grounds us to reality of the physical. Because without the ego, potentially we wouldn't really care about the body, because the higher self doesn't necessarily need the body to still be. Or at least it seems like that based on the teachings and on... at least for me, it seems like that. So the point here is, in Sufism, this inner freedom comes from us being able to liberate ourselves from the ego and from the material world, not necessarily by disappearing or dying, but by stopping to be attached and reliant and sort of influenced by the ego self and by the needs, expectations and sort of influences of the real physical, real quote-unquote world that we are experiencing. And of course, in, you know, in Buddhism we've explored this enlightenment and this nirvana, which of course is this idea that you can awaken to the true nature of reality and attain freedom from suffering, basically by addressing that same idea, by becoming free of the ego, free of the lower self, free from the influences of the material, you know, physical world, and by observing as well that you can become free from your own suffering thereof by simply being and observing that state of being without judgment, without attachment, without expectation. So this is a thought for you. Of course, the monkey and an elephant is a image that stayed with me because I do see when I meditate this, you know, monkey thoughts that arise. Some people sometimes call some of those thoughts also intrusive thoughts, which is funny because, you know, potentially intrusive thoughts, the way I understand it, is like the kind of crazy thought that you might have about, I don't know, doing something really, really out of the ordinary, something unhinged. And you might laugh to yourself by thinking that you're a crazy person by thinking that. And of course, many people might think that it's simply a thought. And the question is whether it's your thought or not. And to that degree, I don't just yet have an answer for you. I'll try to address it in a second. Now, of course, we also have the idea from Christianity about the spiritual freedom and the freedom of all by, you know, knowing the truth, and the truth shall make us free. One of the most, if not the most known passage from the scripture for the idea of freedom to follow one's conscience and live a life of faith. This spiritual freedom, I think, is also a great, you know, analog to all of the freedoms on a spiritual level that all people have. You are free in the same way that you potentially are free to think your thoughts. You are free to believe whatever you want to believe, right? So you are free to believe whether you have a soul or not, or whether you have an ego or not, and so forth, and whether there is God and what that God or, you know, higher self being means for you. So now, few aspects maybe to explore here is that I'll give you three here. I'm not gonna, let's give three, and then I'll jump into sort of tying it all up together. That's my free choice, or is it? So you have the idea that freedom is not only given, it also sort of must be taken or created and ascertained. And for example, on a spiritual level, in terms of practice, my understanding of this idea is that every day as you sit down to meditate, you exercise your freedom of, you know, being in charge of your thoughts, of your body. I recently gave a little talk at work about the benefits of cold shower exposure and meditation. And one thing that I said is that, which really resonated with me, I hope it resonates with you, that you are in charge, or at least I feel like we are in charge of our bodies. But because of the comfort-seeking nature of ours, we allow our bodies and our minds sometimes to be in charge of us. So, for example, I don't know anyone who enjoys shivering cold showers. I know many people that tried them and seen the benefits of them, but I don't know many that enjoy them, and I know I don't. That doesn't mean, though, that it's not good for me, and so whenever I do take a cold shower in the morning, I have to make myself do it. And in a way, I think that's the moment when I'm taking control of my freedom rather than allowing my body to dictate that I will not go in there because it's cold. I choose to go in there because it's cold for my own benefit, and so I exercise the freedom to choose over my bodily sort of basic instincts, let's say. Of course, it can be applied to many other things. Whenever you're doing something that out of comfort and laziness your body or your mind doesn't want to do, you are strengthening that muscle in a similar way that you're at the gym. You have the freedom to work out or not, and of course the benefits of working out now will come afterwards, while the benefits of lying down on the couch right now will immediately come, which is why it's such a difficult, you know, trade-off for many. But exercising that freedom, taking that freedom, creating that freedom for yourself is exactly what this idea of not only being given but also taken and created, I think, is about. Then in terms of our broader perspective of life, I would like you to consider the idea that you are free to come up with a meaning. So both in Man's Search for Meaning, Viktor Frankl pointed out that people who do have something to die for, something to live for, are simply happier and more likely to be successful. It's proven to work as well in terms of, you know, some coaching practices and stuff. If you fight for survival and the other person is fighting for a medal, you will win, because you are fighting for everything and they are just fighting for a piece of, you know, goldish, you know, aluminium or whatever. So in the same way, there is this quote from Nietzsche, he who says, he who has a why can bear almost any how. And so that why, that reason that you have for doing something, can empower your activity. But then, you know, yet again, coming back to the idea of choosing what is meaningful for you, I would encourage you to consider what is the meaning of your life, what is the purpose of your activity, what is meaningful for you, and use it to your advantage in this concept. And also consider, yet again, what exactly do you mean by saying I freely chose that's what's meaningful for me? Because in many ways, I guess that there are external powers that might be impacting your decision making. Now, of course, the same philosopher Nietzsche actually has this idea of a will to power, which basically is like a, let's say, a fundamental drive of us to exert strength and creativity in the world. I guess it's this innate need for us to be so-called heard, to express ourselves in whatever shape or form. Sometimes it might, you know, come out quite ugly, but nevertheless, it's probably stemming from the same instinct, you know, try to be on your own for 3 weeks and see just how much you'd like to speak to someone. I think in many ways, this is yet again something that we're not fully free to choose. We simply are social creatures and we simply need other people. It's unlikely that you would freely choose a life in the middle of nowhere on your own until eternity. And if you did, maybe, you know, you're one of the few that would like that, but it's unlikely on the whole to be the case. So now, before I explore a few more quotes for you, I wanted to give you my own take on the on this whole idea, right? So as we've explored, right, first of all, what does it mean to be free in terms of our mind and body? What does it mean to be free in terms of our thoughts, our responsibilities? Are we free when we are suffering, or are we free from suffering and therefore we are free then? Are we free when we die? Do we have karma? What is free will? Is there autonomy? Do I choose what I want to pursue? And do I have any spiritual or inner freedom? Do I have to attain enlightenment to be free or to feel free? I'll start from the most interesting aspect for myself, something that I've discussed a few times. Maybe I even shared it briefly on the podcast before. Something that really speaks to me volumes in terms of our power, the power that you can, I believe you and myself and everyone else can obtain and wield every day to our own benefit and to the benefit of the world, is, and I don't know how you would catalog that, you choose yourself, what do you think about it? So in terms of the free will, it seems to me that we have a free will of a sort, but to a degree. So, for example, I did not choose, or at least I don't know if I did choose to be born the way I was born, to the people that I was born into, their family, in a place, in the time, in the space. And in many ways, for the many years of my life, until I sort of became a bit more aware of myself, and I think that's one of the steps we can take every day to become more free in this spiritual sort of philosophical context, is by observing and understanding and addressing the way we are, so as to observe whether or not we want to change the way we are. I felt that for many years I sort of ran on autopilot. You know, looking back, I don't even know the guy that I was when I was a kid. It's interesting. I sometimes have this, have these moments when I'm thinking about how did I get to choose going to that school or dating that person or, you know, playing in that football team, whatever, spending that amount of time playing computer games or the other, or choosing to do something because it seemed like. And of course, you know, there are some reasonable arguments to be drawn to make sense of it. So, for example, you know, of course I wanted to play football because everyone else was playing football. For those of you who are listening from United States, I'm talking about soccer, actually. So, you know, of course, everyone in school seemed to want to play football. And so I, you know, being from Poland, where many young guys wanted to play football, I also wanted to play football. I was watching football matches for many years with my parents and my grandparents, and it was such a big thing. And to many, you know, I probably enjoyed myself, don't get me wrong, but looking back, right, for example, right now, you know, I'll watch an odd match with my friends for the benefit of being with them, but the match itself doesn't really matter for me much. And of course, yet again, we can come with some reasonable explanations. Maybe I don't fancy it anymore. Maybe because I saw that there is no career for me in that space, because I was not good enough, then I decided not to. And therefore now I have this, you know, trauma of not playing professional football. So I try to hide it away by not watching football, whatever. We can always come up with reasoning post whatever happened. That's what we're fairly good at. But in terms of actually choosing at the time, it's not obvious for me why I stopped, and it's not obvious for me why I chose to start to begin with. Now, saying that, if we do attain, and I'm not saying I did, but I do feel much more like it, I think there is a level of self-awareness which one can attain when exercising these freedoms to choose becomes a bit more conscious, right? So I guess as you grow up, or maybe as you wake up in many ways, you start observing yourself a bit more, you notice your flaws and you notice your advantages, you start to understand that, you know, the world is much more complex than you thought it is, and maybe you no longer are living in the illusion that whatever, that faster car or a bigger desk will make you happy. Instead, some shifts occur, right? Maybe you know, you meet the love of your life or whatever, or you start working on yourself, which I would say is one of the best predictors, in my experience at least, of actually having a more fulfilling life, when you sort of raise your standards for yourself, not, you know, by being an arrogant prick for everyone else and expecting everyone else to be better while you're staying the same, rather expecting yourself to be better every day and therefore becoming a more attractive person, and simply others around you will appreciate that, and therefore you'll have a better time with them because you'll be a better person for them as well. I think that's something that we can attain. But coming back to the idea, I think to a certain degree we have freedom to choose at any given moment within the confines of that space-time that we are in. And so I don't think there is many things that are impossible. I do believe that you can truly reinvent your life, but there are some restrictions in the moment, in the space, that we have to abide by. For example, living in Poland, maybe, you know, as a 12-year-old, without even a passport to go abroad, I cannot, in that particular moment, decide that I'm going to be a musician in Bangkok, right? I cannot just sort of, close my eyes and suddenly teleport to Bangkok or at least I don't know how to do that. But if we're sticking to the rules of physics that we know of, in terms of our everyday layman's experience, without considering the quantum mechanics and quantum field, it seems to me that we are, to a certain degree, limited by our experience. Like right now, I'm sitting in this room recording a podcast. I cannot be sitting in the other room at the same time recording this same podcast. Maybe in another dimension I am exactly doing that, but in this one, I'm pretty sure it's empty in my bedroom. I don't know. Maybe it isn't. And the funny thing about it is, of course, I cannot really prove it, because if I run there now, thinking that I'm freely choosing to run there, maybe in that moment I disappear there because I freely chose to disappear there. I don't know. But to my point, personally, I believe that we are free to choose to the degree that we're offered. So life deals us cards. You know, if you believe in God, I believe that the universe, God, whatever you want to call it, is offering me opportunities at any given moment. And I am free to choose which to choose to act upon. But, and this is a big but, I can't lie, the catch here is that because of my prior experience and, you know, my motivations at the moment, I am potentially already limiting myself from choosing certain aspects simply because of those predictors. And this is an interesting, you know, conundrum to tackle. And I'm not saying I tackled it, but it seems obvious to me that to a certain degree, our past experience does determine future choices. If you've really got hurt before and you've not gotten over that trauma and you've not dealt with it healthily yet, I'm afraid you will be unlikely to charge into that challenge again knowingly, unless you've dealt with that trauma and sort of overcome it, right? So the idea of whether or not we are fully free, it seems to me that we are free to a certain degree on the day-to-day basis. In terms of karma and in terms of, you know, the free will across our lives, I do believe in reincarnation. You know, the episode that I've recorded with Rami in his studio, which is a really great conversation, I'll actually link it below for you. And we talked about God and freedom to choose and karma and reincarnation. I think particularly about reincarnation because he's Muslim. I do believe in reincarnation because it seems impossible for me that the only life the only life we live is in this dimension, in this. I do believe there is some higher self that is essentially eternal. Maybe it's my soul, a part of a bigger pool of souls that is literally just chilling. You know, maybe we are like a sea of consciousness, and every now and then a part of it drops onto the earth or onto another, you know, space, and becomes self-conscious and therefore allows itself to experience the universe. And then once we die, it just evaporates like after the rain, you know, there is a little mist and the water goes into the ground and then it goes back up again as it gets hot. And we come back to the sea of consciousness. And it speaks to me quite true. It rings true to me, this idea that not only am I experiencing this life, but I'm also experiencing all the lives simultaneously. And I probably have some karma from prior lives. And thanks to that karma, considering time does not exist, which is another rabbit hole to jump into, and I'm afraid we're running out of time on this one, so I'm actually gonna, I think I'm just gonna put it in as a note for you to maybe prepare this episode, since we're diving so deep into the mysteries of life. But if you believe that time is just a concept, and in and of itself it does not exist unless there is someone to observe it, I think, for example, that there is no time. We simply wither in our physicality, and so we count down time like a due date on our body meat sacks that we carry. But that does not mean that time itself exists. It simply is, from my perspective, an understanding of this phenomena that, for the benefit of our organization skills or whatever, we came up with to comprehend the world. I think it's similar to a map or a drawing or language. Language in and of itself is nothing. It's like a code that allows us to communicate, right? But that doesn't mean that it would be here if there was no one to communicate. Similarly to a map, a map of a place is not that place, it's just a map. So it's a tool that allows us to find ourselves in that space. But if there is no one to find themselves in that space, then the map is not serving its purpose anymore, and therefore, one could argue it's not really a map anymore, because the meaning of the tool is what it does, right? What it intends, what its intent to be used for, I guess. That's a good way to put it in my, ignorant terms. Maps of meaning, of course, and We Who Wrestle with God, I'll link below as well. These are the two seminal works from Jordan Peterson, with especially Maps of Meaning, which really helped me in exploring these concepts further, especially like how we choose what we choose and how we give meaning to the world. And I definitely have to read it again. It's a study, it's not a little read. Now, finally, I don't feel I can really talk about all of these things. I'm sort of freestyling for you anyway. But finally, it seems to me that, I said earlier that I don't exactly know if I want to be enlightened. And then I sort of hesitated because I had a thought that while I don't feel I want to be enlightened now, I don't know how I'm going to feel when I'm 80 and just chilling. And, potentially at that point, basically getting ready to depart onto the next adventure. It certainly seems to me that making peace with the idea of impermanent life and of essentially making peace with death, which the invitation is for us in all of the major, scriptures out there, to basically become, to befriend this idea that we are not the whole of the universe. We're simply, we are, and then we're not, and whatever comes next we don't know about, but we can live a better life by making peace with the fact that we're gonna die. There is this argument to be made that if there was no death, there would be no inspiration for us to be better each day and to make better choices, simply because there would be no expiration date, So there would be less incentive to find meaning in our lives. So it's easy to say that you want to be enlightened when you're suffering, I think. but it's not obvious for me that people who are enjoying themselves would say the same. I hesitated because I feel like I'm living a really great life, and in many aspects of that life, however humble they may be, are really fulfilling. And so, you know, the idea of enlightenment and so the idea of lack of attachments whatsoever potentially would mean as well letting go of the attachments of, you know, having my wonderful wife, doing what I love, enjoying the spaces that I'm in, having the friends that I surround myself with, you know, having the goals and dreams and aspirations and activities that I participate in, and feeling the gratitude. And of course, maybe the enlightened ones will say that you don't need any of that the moment you're enlightened, because it's so fulfilling to be enlightened. Maybe for that reason, I'm freely choosing not to aspire to that enlightenment just yet. You know, it's like willful blindness, right? You can choose to be ignorant of the problems of the world simply because you think the suffering that you will feel from understanding these problems is not worth it, right? And that's a good point. Not necessarily that I agree with it, but I understand it certainly. And I understand why many people choose that route and simply just, you know, close their eyes or choose to look away, essentially. But, you know, in terms of freedom, coming back to, are we really free? Am I really free? I think, I emotionally, logically, within the confines of the unfree life that I'm living, within the confines of my space-time and, you know, even of my understanding, within the confines of the limits of this language, you know, trying to convey this to you, I am already limited to the degree that I cannot suddenly start speaking Polish or Swahili because I don't even understand and know Swahili. I cannot speak Polish for you because you don't understand Polish probably. So there might even be a word or two or a description that will just not make sense. Or maybe I would use an idiom that in your language doesn't mean anything, right? So certainly we are not fully free, or at least for me, certainly we are not fully free. It seems to me that we are fundamentally free as an aspect of our human existence by being able to choose within the confines of what, you know, of the experience and the space-time that we're placed into. The context of our story limits our ability to choose, but we still have a limited ability to choose within that confines. And I believe by becoming more self-aware, by becoming more accountable for our actions, by becoming more kind and loving to others and understanding to ourselves and others, and by exercising this power of freedom with full responsibility and understanding that we will falter and we will fall, but we will try to do our best for the benefit of ourselves and others, I think we can gain more freedom over time in this spiritual existential space. And you are free to explore your freedom in any way you choose. You can try to liberate yourself from the cycle of rebirth and death by attaining enlightenment. You might free yourself by trying to live an effortless and spontaneous action-filled life by, you know, following the Wu Wei from Taoism. You might want to pursue your happiness, or, you know, exercise your right of freedom to believe whatever you want to believe. You can pursue enlightenment, or you can choose to do none of that. You can choose to limit your freedom in some way. And quite funnily enough, I know it's quite a long episode by now, but one more thing I wanted to say, which I said at the very beginning, and I just reminded myself about it, is, you know, unfortunately, we are not necessarily free from our habits. and our addictions. And this is a big point. And I'd like you to, if you are, for example, a smoker and you don't believe you can quit, and I know how it feels because I've been one once. You know, the episode How to Quit Smoking, the book Easy Way to Quit Smoking by Alan Carr is certainly for you. And I think getting rid of addictions and being addicted to anything, whether it's, you know, watching TV too much, eating too much, working out too much, having sex too much, I don't know, porn, whatever, like, anything can become an addiction, you know. I could become addicted to podcasting and podcast 24/7 to the point that I exhaust myself and die, you know. I think that's another important aspect that I do believe in, is as you become more self-aware, as you become more understanding of yourself and of your limits of freedom, you should also become and strive to become aware and free of those habits and, you know, mental prisons and addictions of any kind that you have got yourself into. I believe there are many organizations and people out there and forces that benefit from keeping us docile and unfree. And so with each step towards more self-awareness, spiritual freedom, existential freedom, I think we're also taking our right to be free as human beings, essentially. And so that's what I wish for you as well. And so, yeah, I'll put links below to all of these different episodes that we've explored and topics. Of course, I understand, I sort of just scratched the surface of what might that mean to be free. And my honest answer to are we really free is, I don't know. It seems to me that that we are to a certain degree, but what really means in this question, I don't exactly know. I've put it there for a reason. It just made for a good exploration of it, and hopefully made you interested in getting to know yourself more and becoming more freedom-oriented. So, yeah, I hope this is something interesting. Please, you know, try, if you've not tried before, sit down for a moment and try to see if you can not think about things and start on your journey to maximize your freedom, your existential freedom. So yeah, if you've not yet, please follow, subscribe, you know, so you don't miss the next episode. If you like this kind of content, even without my arguably pretty face, please leave me a comment, you know, share it with a friend. Let me know. Let me know also how the quality of this voice recording was. And so, yeah. Other than that, have a wonderful, wonderful week. Stay happy. Stay free to the degree you can. Stay healthy. And I'll see you next time.